Bill McIntosh Show now on with a double header dealing with the pro-life victory of the Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health decision of the Supreme Court of the United States. We're going to have on Louina Stoltenberg of Operation Outcry. They helped participate by submitting testimonies about women who've had abortions and how devastated their lives were as a result. And also Reverend Jim Harden of Compass Care. They have a pro-crisis pregnancy center in Buffalo, New York that was firebombed. Folks, this is going to be great. Thanks for tuning in to the Bill McIntosh Show. Bill McIntosh Show now on with Louina Stoltenberg. She represents Operation Outcry in Iowa. She's the Iowa state leader, and she's a woman who has been hurt by abortion. She had three abortions herself in her teen years, which led to this depression, promiscuity, alcohol and drug abuse, and suicide attempts. Abortion caused her to be infertile, so the only children she ever bore, she killed. Abortion kills children and hurts women. She's testified before the U.S. Congress. She's written the book Singing in the Wilderness and joined over 2,200 other women on an amicus brief for the Dobbs, Mississippi case, testifying to the pain and devastation abortion causes women, babies, and our nation. Her website is www.operationoutcry.org. You can see it behind me, folks, with a picture of Louina. And so I want to talk to her today about the overturning of Roe v. Wade. And the fight has just begun because now we have our beloved president doing everything he can to kill babies, you know? And his wife is lamenting and they're crying a constitutional right to abortion. And where's that? They talk about for our, I think it's in the Declaration of Independence that talks about for our life and posterity, right?
Yeah.
Amazing. And how the heck you get a right to an abortion is beyond me. It would be funny if so much wasn't at stake, you know?
Absolutely.
It's actually pathetic. The best thing is, they're pathetic. But so I wanted to ask you about the work of Operation Outcry. I do know something about it. I wanted to know, you know, what you can fill us in on what you're up to with it. The importance of Operation Outcry for the Supreme Court amicus briefs and what you're doing in the great state of Iowa. It's not the Cornhusker state. It's the Hawkeye State. The Buckeye State, but that's Ohio.
Oh, that's Ohio.
Okay, the Hawkeye State. Great. So tell me what you've been up to with Operation Outcry and its importance to the recent SCOTUS decision in Dobbs versus Jackson's Women's Health.
Okay. Well, I am the Iowa state leader for Operation Outcry, and Operation Outcry is an amazing organization. It is like an arm of the Justice Foundation. Alan Parker is that legal part of the Justice Foundation. And we, those that are with Operation Outcry, we are men and women who have had abortions that regret that because we've been hurt by it, devastated. Our life has been changed by it. And so Alan felt like that was so necessary to have those testimonies of men and women of how they were harmed. Because when you have law, you look at law after a certain amount of time to see how is that law affecting our nation? How is it affecting those that have to live with it? And so as he began to talk to women, he started realizing the devastation of abortion, physically, spiritually, emotionally, in every way. And so he felt like that is a great piece of evidence for the overturning of Roe versus Wade and turning around what is bad law. And so that is the arm of Operation Outcry. We are men and women who have had abortions that speak out about them. We speak out at the state level, a national level, at every level, trying to change law so that women will not be harmed and our nation won't be harmed.
You know, I heard, I think it was today, I listened to a video clip in which somebody said that one woman out of three has had abortions. Is that true? Is that accurate?
Well, today it's probably one in four, but years ago it was one in three women that had an abortion. Today, numbers of abortion are down, although I think they're rising again, but it is about one in four, which is devastating when you really think about it.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, since you've been in, how long have you been an activist in this fight?
Probably about 37 years. I started in 1987.
Wow. So, okay. So obviously, as an activist, I would assume you're dealing with this topic at a grassroots level. You're talking to people one-on-one, one-on-two, one-on-three. Sometimes there's a group of people, a husband, a wife, whatever. Do you think it's universal that there's a lot of ambivalence with these women? Or are they, half of them are gung-ho, the best thing I ever did was this abortion, and the other half is, very regretful?
I will tell you, Bill, that's a very good question. It really is. And I think every woman, and there are some studies that say 100% of women are affected by the abortions that they had. And I believe that. It's just how women deal with it. Some of us have come to regret it and realized it was wrong because of the pain and suffering we went through. The alcoholism, the drug abuse. A woman who's had an abortion somewhat makes an agreement with death. And so the self-destructive lifestyle sets in because you realize, or maybe subconsciously even, you realize what you've done. And so the only way to deal with it is either to ask forgiveness and to move forward in that and find healing, or is to try to justify that decision you made. And so when you ask that question, where is the majority of these people? I believe those women that are marching the streets with their pink hats on probably did regret that decision, but they don't know how to deal with the fact that they killed their own child. And so the way to deal with that is to get angry and is to defend the decision I made. And so women like me, right, who have had healing from it, we're able to receive that forgiveness and then come into a place of healing. I mean, and that's just continuous, but to speak out and grab hold of other women who are trapped in that place and say, there's hope and there's forgiveness and there's healing available for you.
At one point in your life, were you one of those pink-hatted ladies that was really pro Planned Parenthood, that was on board with it? Were you that angry female at one point?
No, I don't think I was ever that angry female, because I got pregnant so young that I really didn't even know what abortion was. And I mean, I did, but I didn't. I heard about it, but I was so young, that wasn't on my radar. And then when all of a sudden I'm in crisis and I don't know what I should do, because that's what a woman goes through, then I start asking adults. Like when I went to the abortion facility, they told me this isn't a baby. They told me this was going to be a safe procedure, safer than if I carried a term. They told me all the things I felt like I needed to hear. And so then I believed that rhetoric. And so then I made that decision. And then afterwards, I regretted it so much, but it was like I stuffed it. So I never got angry about it. I think I just went through all those processes of denial and, first there's relief, but then there's denial and then there's a regret. And then so I never was that angry person. I think once I realized what the abortion industry had done to me, and I know I made that decision, I am completely responsible for it, but I was lied to and deceived. And I think once I found that out and realized I couldn't have children, then that anger set in. And I thought, I've got to find out what this really is so that I can rise up and I can tell women so they don't make that same decision.
Wow. So, and how old were you when you had your last abortion?
My last abortion? I was probably 19.
Wow. So, so what is it that you've been able to cull from your conversations with people? Because I imagine you talk to people who are women who've had abortions and they're totally okay with what they've done. What are those conversations like between two kind of like two sisters united by a terrible, terrible fact in their life that they aborted their kids? I mean, what are those conversations like?
It really kind of depends on where that woman is, but I will tell you, Bill, most times that woman, when she starts hearing another woman's story of how that one was harmed, they're a little more open to receive and listen. And then they kind of start, like you start talking about the symptoms and they start thinking, oh, I do feel that. Oh, I did go through that. Oh, I, you know, and it starts to become a reality where I think they really start to think about it. Most women are not vocal about their abortions. Most of the women out there are very silent. They're sitting in silence. This is their secret, and they're trying to hide from it. And so they aren't really wanting to talk about it unless you bring it up first and it's a one-on-one. And then I found that most women are, they are open to listen. There are those that are just adamant about it and angry. And sometimes you just can't talk to them, but you pray for them.
Yeah. So, I mean, have you seen, you've probably seen cases where they've come around, right? That they've been really hard and angry for a long time. And then all of a sudden they broke down and said, this is horrible.
Yep, absolutely. Yep. So many women like that. So many. Because it is so devastating.
Right. So then a lot of them have kind of just kind of embellished their rage and they celebrate it. You hear women. I mean, I see these articles that really astonish me. Women, you know, they think that they credit their abortion for becoming millionaires or, you know, becoming successful. I mean, come on, man.
Yeah.
Tell me about the inner dynamic. What happens to a woman when she's been through this? Is it common to have anniversary traumas? This was the day I did it.
Yeah.
This is how old my son or daughter would have been. We would have done vacations, birthdays, graduations. Is that real?
That is very real, very real. In fact, you know, because I'm part of Operation Outcry, I speak to women all the time about this. And so women truly are regretful over that. They're sorry that they did it. It is very real. Alcoholism, I can't tell you how many women after I speak will come up and tell me they were alcoholics, they used drugs, they were depressed, and were even on antidepressant medications. They had multiple abortions, because when you abort your child, many times there's that loss, but the world's telling us there is no loss. So we don't deal with the loss. So then what do? Subconsciously, you try to replace that child. So then there's women that, then you get into this vicious cycle where you're replacing that child and then you're in crisis again. So you abort. And so the trauma is anniversary, like you said, very traumatic. Some women, if they can't have children like myself because of those abortions, wow. you don't go to baby showers. It's hard to hold babies or see people with babies. Because
what do you feel? What? Let me ask you, excuse me one second if I can interrupt a little bit. Uh-huh. What does a woman feel when she holds a child that's obviously not her own, after she's had an abortion? What's it like?
It is very difficult, very difficult. I remember my sister having a preemie and being able to hold that baby. And I just kind of went in another room with my little niece and just cried, because I knew who, you know, as you're looking at that, something physically, you can see what have I lost? What have I done? Quite honestly, it seemed like it was this traumatic event and you had to get rid of it. But look at the years and years, you know, birthdays you've lost. And I think of the people that affected my life too, like my parents, three grandchildren, they'll never hold, they'll never meet. And then you look at that whole cycle, Bill, you think of those, my kids would be 30s, maybe even close to 40s.
Wow.
So just one child that I killed, it's generations, because that child would be having children and then their children would be having children. What have
wow.
We haven't just killed 63 to 65 million babies here. We have killed generations.
Oh my gosh, we've killed a nation, man.
We have.
Presidents, Nobel Prize winners, mm-hmm. great entrepreneurs, incredible stories. Never will be told. Only God only knows his great plan for those kids.
Yeah,
so, but thank God you're still here with us and you can witness to this and, you know, you can have the conversation. And I think we need to have the conversation, but I think it's time for us. You know, what they want to tell us is, yeah, we have to have a conversation and we have to do the talking about how bad it is not to have Roe v. Wade. Yeah. Well, no. It's mm-hmm. important to have the conversation about those kids
yes.
that we'll never see. And, mm-hmm. that, you know, you can't, how can you, it's a little bit like, you know, if you have one child and mm-hmm. he or she doesn't have any brothers or sisters, right? And mm-hmm. he sees kids that do, and he or she feels like, wow, you know, if only I had siblings, right? And so there's that kind of an emotional crater, okay, that you're dealing with. And, you know, I mean, this is what our country is dealing with, this incredible demographic crater. I say that because America is poised to start decreasing in population. We have so many abortions, so much contraception. And now we don't recognize our country. Why? Because like the word nation comes from a Latin word that has to do with birth. And when you destroy birth, you destroy a country, you destroy a nation. Mm-hmm. And so now we're seeing a country we don't recognize, people from strange places with totally different customs. And it's not that we're not welcoming, but mm-hmm. what has happened? This has brought on a tremendous punishment in terms of our culture and where we're at. It's just that I think that the moral destruction in our country is so staggering, you know?
It is.
So anyway, I mean, of course, you know, what is it that you can share with us and our listeners about what works regarding outreach? What affects people? What brings them in and touches hearts and minds as well as minds and maybe changes hearts? You know, because that's where we're at now. I mean, we've got a president that's hell-bent on doing everything in his power to bring about the destruction of innocent children. I mean, by hook or by crook, I'll put them on Indian reservations because they'll, you know, deem it federal land or military bases, or put them on ships. I mean, this is sick. So what has worked for you regarding reaching out to people and breaking the ice?
I would say when we share our stories, you know, Try to talk to people everywhere you go. And I know we've always heard that, you know, you're not supposed to talk about politics or sex, things like that.
Religion.
Religion. Yeah, but we need to talk to other people one-on-one because other people are hurting and they're feeling the same way. I mean, you just gave a whole multitude of craziness that's going on in our nation that people need to talk about and release, and we need to find hope with one another and resolve. But also, I mean, the only thing that's going to change this nation is truly prayer and the Lord. It really is. When I know there's hope, then I can be filled with hope, and then I can offer hope to someone else. So when we speak to others, we talk to them about hope and life in Christ.
Beautiful. Hey, you know, so is there anything in Scripture that really that reached out to you?
Yeah, when I first realized what I had done, I was praying, I came across that scripture that talks about he who has been forgiven much loves much. And that just blew my mind because I thought the Lord will forgive all of us for whenever we ask, he'll forgive. In fact, he says he'll throw our sins as far as the east is to the west, and he won't remember them anymore. And so there is forgiveness for us for anything and all things that we do. And that does bring it brings hope, but it brings life also. I mean, I don't think I could have lived my life without knowing God would forgive me. I mean, how do you live your life if you have killed your children or your child and you can't be forgiven for that, or you don't know there is forgiveness for it? It's pretty traumatic, you know? So absolutely. Yeah.
Well, you know, it's, tell you, you know, I used to be a sidewalk counselor.
Oh, wow.
You know, and it's something else, you know, people change their minds. And and then there are some that just go through with it, and they don't want to listen to people urging them. But there's a lot of them out there now. They've made that walk, and they've walked out of that abortion mill. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the Operation Outcry petition is something that we're doing a big push on, I guess, right? I mean, how can people help this tremendous mission?
Yes, there's two types of petitions. There's a moral outcry petition, which if you're just the average person and you want to say, I'm against abortion, I think abortion should be illegal, you can go online onto moraloutcry.org, I believe, and sign that petition. But then there's also an Operation Outcry, It's like a declaration. It's not a petition. It's a declaration. If you are a man or you're a woman that's been hurt by abortion, you can go on operationoutcry.org and you can just fill it. It'll say a declaration and it will walk you through questions about your abortion and what you went through. Quite honestly, I feel like it's healing, but it's also used as evidence. When we started the show, you talked about the amicus brief and things like that that help with law. So those written testimonies of those women were part of the evidence in that Dobbs case to help overturn it. Those justices read our stories of how women
Wow.
And that became part of that decision.
Well, you know, I'm really glad that Alan, let's say, thought of that angle.
Yes.
It's so important. I mean, you know, there's so much denial. There's so much abolishment of voices, you know, in this topic. And, you know, I would like, you know, imagine if we had somebody had $50 million and could say, hey, you know something? Every Super Bowl next 10 years, we're going to do a big ad and have you and Cindy Collins, right?
Uh-huh.
And other women share their story and invite people to participate in Operation Outcry. And I, you know, I urge people, I mean, I got involved with LifeSite News and I just give just a couple of bucks a month. It's a joke. Yes. I mean, but I said, I got to get something. My gosh, this is, and you know, and then there's a pro-life center counseling operation in New York called Expectant Mother Care. And I remember for the longest time, I was giving like 12 bucks a month and I totally forgot about it. You know, it's amazing. I'd given, you know, tons of money. And, you know, can you do that with Operation Outcry? Does it allow you to be a monthly donor?
Absolutely. Yes, it does. If you're on the website, there's a place to donate. Yep.
All right. Well, good. That's what we got to do, folks. I mean, listen, yes. if not now, when? Mm-hmm. If not us, who? And if not here, where? Right. So we got to do that. And you know, it's something that I think that hey, it you can then be somebody who says, well, I wasn't on the sidelines as a spectator. I was in the thick of it, helping. And that's what we have to see. So anyway, folks, check out. Go to www.operationoutcry.org. Plus, you have that book. I mean, I'd love to ask you about the book, Singing in the Wilderness. Is that, do you have 5 minutes to talk about that? Or am I taking up too much of your time?
Sure, I can give you a few more minutes. I'd love to talk about it. My book, Singing in the Wilderness, I really felt like the Lord was telling me to write it. And it is about the abortions, but it's so much more. It's just about how it affected my life. But then once I received the Lord, how that affected my life and just all the miraculous things that took place through that. When we say yes. But the book is written in such a way, it's not really a devotional, it's my life story, but at the end of every chapter, I go into detail of certain things like the first chapter, rejection, shame. And so it kind of walks you through scriptures of it, but also asks questions that you can go deeper. So it's very proactive and interactive so that a woman can ask herself those hard questions and then go before the Lord. So there's prayer in there and there's scriptures in there, but there's questions. So, but it's, if you want to just avoid that and just read it through, it's a great read.
It's also autobiographical, right?
Yes, it is. Yep.
Wow. Well, great. That's sounds like a great book. Folks, check it out. Singing in the Wilderness, probably a great book for men and women because men participate, absolutely, pushing the woman to get abortions, threatening them. We're done unless you get rid of it.
Yeah.
Terrible. You know, right? And so, and yeah. The women, you know, participate, the mothers, the grandmothers, you know, terrible. So yes. Good. Well, listen, Luena, thanks so much for being on the Bill McIntosh Show. Hope we can have you on again and talk about all the great things that you're doing with Operation Outcry. So folks, check it out, www.operationoutcry.org. Luena Stoltenberg, great to have you on the Bill McIntosh Show. Godspeed to you and the great things you're doing to help women and men scarred by abortion.
The absolutely catastrophic mismanagement, the criminal overprinting of our U.S. dollar is rendering its value every day that goes by less and less. Therefore, take matters into your own hands, patriots. Go to ourgoldguy.com. Protect your monetary assets now. Invest in gold and silver. Do it now. Tell them Bill McIntosh sent you and protect your assets today. ourgoldguy.com. Tell them Bill McIntosh sent you. Get it. You won't regret it.
Bill McIntosh Show now on with Reverend Jim Harden. He's the CEO of Compass Care. They're headquartered in Rochester, New York. Is that correct, Reverend Jim?
That's correct. Yes.
Great. And a lot of people heard about that unusual attack that took place at the beginning of June, June 7th to be exact, whereby a pro-abortion zealotry group, I guess Jane's Revenge, carried out an attack, firebombed this pro-life pregnancy services center. Tell us about that attack, what's happened since then, if we know anything about the perpetrators, and the tie-in with this terrible attack yesterday that took place in Highland Park, Illinois, whereby a gunman opened up, killed six people. I think he wounded about 30 people. But let's first bring us back to Buffalo, New York on June 7th and what happened and what we know now or we don't know now.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. Well, thanks for having me on, first of all.
It's my pleasure, Reverend Jim.
Yeah.
It's an honor for me to do it. It really is. You've done a great thing. You've been around for about 20 years, since the 1980s or more, 40 years?
Yeah. Well, the organization started in 1980, and they brought me on in 2001 to medicalize the operation. And had never been done before, meaning pro-life pregnancy centers had never used medical services directly in their service operations to women facing unplanned pregnancy. So we were able to kind of crack that nut, back in 2001, 2002, while we were being kind of subpoenaed and investigated by the Attorney General of New York, Elliot Spitzer, at the time. That was interesting. When we finally figured it out, he withdrew the subpoenas and we launched. And then we were reported to the Attorney General's office. He then came out publicly saying, we're aware of this organization and we don't have any concerns at this point, which basically opened the doors wide open for other pregnancy centers to do what we did. And we coached many of them into medicalizing similarly to what Compass Care has done. So thousands and thousands of women since 2002 have received, essentially free medical care when they're facing unplanned pregnancy and considering abortion. So what happened in Buffalo, though, is unique. At least it used to be. Now it's becoming all too common. And that is, we are firebombed. Pro-life organizations and pregnancy centers are now the targets of what you just described as a zealotry group. These are pro-abortion, essentially domestic terrorists. They said they were going to do this kind of thing. We reported it to the local police and the FBI 2 weeks before they actually firebombed us.
How's that?
And they did it.
Were there warnings? Did they warn?
Yes.
Did they give you a warning that they were going to carry it out?
Yeah, their first communique, they called it a communique, came out warning that more of these attacks were going to happen after the first firebombing in Wisconsin, in Madison, Wisconsin. And they said they had people in every state, and they have cell groups in every state, and they are willing to carry out more attacks if we don't shut down. And that was their warning. And they carried out the most brutal attack upon Compass Care's Buffalo office. We have a medical office in Buffalo. And on July 7th, early in the morning at 2:30, I got a call from our regional executive saying, we got smoke detectors going off. I got to go to the building and see what's going on. I said, okay, let me know when you get there. Well, he arrived and the police and fire rescue had gotten there and they found that the windows had been broken and fires were lit in the facility. Catastrophic damage, and the signature kind of graffiti scrawl of Jane's Revenge was on the side of the building. I said, Jane was here. And that's they later, a couple days later, took responsibility for it. Jane's Revenge is the pro-abortion terrorist group named after the Jane's Collective in the 1960s out of Chicago. That was an underground abortion kind of movement providing women abortions before it was legalized in Illinois. So, I called it at that point, I called it the pro-abortion Kristallnacht. There are now over 70 such attacks across the country. There have been no arrests. There have been no additional state or federal allocation of law enforcement resources to protect pro-life organizations and people. We're not quite sure what's going on or why it's taking so long to find perpetrators all across the country. You know, and to add insult to injury, 6 days after we were firebombed, New York State Governor Hochul, I mean, this sounds surreal. It sounds like a dystopian novel, but New York State Governor Hochul signed a bill not to investigate the arsonists, but to investigate pro-life pregnancy centers. And while she was at the press conference at the bill signing, she referred to us as subhuman. Subhuman. She called us Neanderthals.
She literally used that word, that term?
She called us Neanderthals. Neanderthals. I, you know, when I said it was a pro-abortion Kristallnacht, I really meant that. And what that is, as you know, is the watershed moment when violence tipped in 1938 Nazi Germany into the Jewish community. And that the brown shirts in 1938 November essentially targeted Jewish-owned businesses, went out in the dark of night, broke all the windows and lit fires in these businesses. And there's two things that caused this to become the tipping point of violence into the Jewish community. Number one, a lack of public outcry, right, against it, which you're seeing in the mainstream media right now. Nobody's covering this. 70 attacks, nobody's saying a word. And number two, a refusal on the part of the political elite to criminalize the violence and arrest these people. And that's exactly what you're seeing. You're seeing not only are we being attacked by pro-abortion zealots, as you described them, but we're also being attacked by legislature. And then you got the New York State Attorney General, Letitia James, coming out not just last week, saying we need to demanding that Google eliminate all pregnancy centers from their maps so that women can't find us. I mean, New York State, the Attorney General is the chief law enforcement officer. Their job is to enforce the law equally for all people, all citizens, not just the ones that agree with them. And we're being treated like second class citizens simply because of what we believe.
I mean, that's what this reminds me of what Chris Slattery. I know Chris Slattery. I'm friends with Chris. Yeah, I lived downstate New York much of my life, and I helped with the expectant mother care in Metro New York. And they also got on a board that's the same treatment model, whereby they had ultrasounds, they had medical staff, they would give referrals to medical personnel that would help a mother with an unplanned pregnancy. And they started being subjected to an outrageous use of the RICO Act.
Yeah.
Basically, which, by the way, when is somebody going to invoke the RICO Act against this, you know, these attacks nationwide and 70 attacks against pro-life counseling centers? That to me sounds like it's a wave of organized crime. I mean, how is this happening? Is anybody investigating, you know?
That's a great point. RICO, we've already talked to attorneys about this. We're exploring the possibility of these attacks in addition to congressmen, 22 state attorneys general, as well as, New York Governor Hochul conspiring against pro-life people and organizations. And if you add into that, of course, the pro-abortion domestic terrorists, you've got, in my mind, a clear RICO case. So, to your point, we do have attorneys looking into that, and we hope that everybody's going to be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. It's illegal for anyone to use their official government capacity to intentionally restrict the civil rights and freedoms of the citizens.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, how on earth can they restrict the proper response of law enforcement authorities or hinder them in some way or tell them to stand down when property is being destroyed? Now, by the way, is it the case that this was not the only firebombing against a pro-life pregnancy services center in the United States? I mean, I know there have been the graffiti, but have there been actual firebombings as well?
Yes. Oh, there have been other firebombings, one in Oregon, one in Wisconsin, one in Colorado, one attempted in Nashville, but it didn't go off. They broke the window and threw in the firebomb, but it didn't go off. So hopefully they're going to get some fingerprints off that one. But still, there have been multiple firebombings of pregnancy centers and attempts at the same. So, the latest mass shooting in suburban Chicago over the 4th of July weekend is, I think, related. And I mean, not necessarily related to the same people doing the same kinds of activity. I mean, that it's there are 309 victims so far in terms of mass shootings in this country. And I think the root cause of the mass shootings is the same as the root cause for abortion. And it's the devaluation of human life. Absolutely. We have a systemic, nationwide, decades-long devaluation of human life. You know, the spirit of Dobbs, when Dobbs came out on June 24th and changed the abortion empire forever, thousands of abortion appointments were canceled. The billion-dollar abortion empire now had to go to a new kind of hub-and-spoke model, similar to what might happen if, you know, say the government told the Ford Motor Company that they can't have dealerships in 30 states tomorrow. It would be devastating, and they'd have to go to a new model if they're going to survive. And that's exactly what they're having to do. But, you know, what's going on is we've devalued life in such a way that we no longer believe that we're made in the image of God and deserving of blessing and protection from the womb to the tomb. We no longer have this inherent understanding of that everyone is uniquely and absolutely invaluable and therefore inviolable. And I say inviolable because it's a word we don't often use, but it's a word I think that needs to come back into common parlance. Inviolable means that you shouldn't be violated. Why? Why are human beings so valuable that we shouldn't hurt them, that we bless them and protect them in every stage of life? Why is that? Is it because that the government says we're valuable? Is it because I say I'm valuable and you might not have the same opinion? Well, we've been teaching our citizens for nigh on 40 years that they are just arbitrary, meaningless mistakes in this cosmos. Well, what does that do? It essentially eliminates the ability for society to have a common set of core values, a common moral framework. We have no basis for human value anymore. It used to be that in a Judeo-Christian culture, we would say we're all made in the image of God and therefore equally valuable, deserving of blessing and protection from the womb to the tomb without qualification. Because the opposite of love is not hate. The opposite of love is partiality. It's me playing God, getting to decide who qualifies as a person and who does not qualify exactly as a person.
Right. And I wanted to ask you, you know, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, given the fact that there have been multiple attacks in multiple states, you would think that they would be activated, they would be instructed to begin to carry out investigations. What has happened? Have they made any pronouncements? Have they any statements at all from the FBI, from Merrick Garland's office about this? It's very, very hard to believe that they would be standing down in 50 states to protect an organization that's obviously carrying out terror attacks and destroying property. It's basically a situation where you've got a concerted effort to destroy property.
Oh, yes. And not only destroy property, but they've now threatened lives. My family had to be relocated and because of threats and intimidation. They're in Jane's Revenge second communique, when they took responsibility for the firebombing in Buffalo, they essentially said, you know, next time it's not going to be so easily cleaned up as fire and graffiti, basically claiming an open season, they said, against pregnancy centers. So, yeah, there are major threats. And I don't know, quite frankly, what law enforcement is doing at the federal level. They're playing their cards pretty close to the vest. And, you know, that's part of law enforcement's job, I guess, from what I'm told. So nevertheless, you know, you would think that if it was any other arson attack or any other arson, they typically send out reports within 24 hours. They have arrests within, you know, thereafter.
Press conferences. Inform the public what they are up to.
Yep.
Requesting help, maybe a toll-free number to call the FBI or the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives concerning this, so that there's a common database to be able to work leads.
Yes.
There's no coordinated effort on the part of the federal government to respond to this challenge, and which basically means that it is open season. Nobody's going to do anything.
Well, my concern is that they're, you know, some additional attacks are going to be engaged, and it's going to be worse than it was in the previous attacks. And it is my hope that the FBI and the ATF, et cetera, are working in conjunction with one another. We don't understand why arrests have not been made. We're hopeful. We know that the local police are working hard in Amherst, outside of Buffalo, taking lead on the investigation there.
That's just maybe, one, but we're talking about one, excuse me, Reverend, we're talking about one incident.
Right.
There have been 70.
70.
Okay, so where's the coordination regarding law enforcement response at a federal level to attacks that are taking place, you know, in such a way that, you know, we're dealing with interstate acts of terror, basically. Yeah.
I think they owe it to the public to tell us, you know, what the status is. These are pro-life people, pro-life organizations. These are citizens, and they're literally, as a group, being targeted. We are, as a group, a pro-life group of citizens. Because of our beliefs, we are being targeted for violence. And we have had no status update. So
let me ask you a question. Excuse me. I assume that at some point you contacted local federal law enforcement in New York State. Have you actually reached out to them about this case?
I reached out to New York State, New York State Police. They have a hate crimes division. I believe that this qualifies as a hate crime. They never got back to me. On an unrelated matter, I did have one officer with anti-terrorism task force reach out, and that was very kind of him. To my knowledge, there's no additional law enforcement that's been allocated to protect pro-life pregnancy centers still. So I don't know to what extent they're engaging or not engaging.
I go into the assumption that they're not engaging, because when you've had, it's one thing if you have one attack take place in one particular jurisdiction at a local level, I could understand how they wouldn't feel compelled to get involved. But we're talking about firebombings taking place in several states, an organization that claims credit for it, that's begging for federal law enforcement response. And what I'd like to ask is, you know, how are we going to coordinate pressure towards federal authorities? Because I think this is what we need to do. I really think we need to start asking people throughout the 50 states to start contacting their local federal FBI and BATFE offices. I mean, how many states actually saw attacks? Were there about 50 attacks in all 50 states, or how many different states saw an attack? And
from what I understand, there are at least more than half the states saw an attack. And one of the things that we would like to see happen is we'd like to see the state's attorneys general, do some proactive investigation. You know, we know they're claiming, this Jane's Revenge is claiming to have operatives in every state. Let's do some proactive investigation. A lot of times law enforcement doesn't do anything until something bad happens. Well
something bad has already happened. This is what angers me.
Go ahead.
Reverend, I want to ask you, what was the estimate of the property damage to that? I saw that facility has been totaled. Nearly total.
Yeah. Well, we had to gut it. We had to totally gut it and start over. We're looking at, you know, somewhere on the order of $250,000 to $300,000 in just repairing the internal damage. So we're going to end up with the contents and everything and the medical equipment. It's going to be
$500,000.
Yeah.
So, I mean, why do we have to wait anymore for the federal government to be able to make a determination that, yeah, it's time for federal government law enforcement assets to get involved and start prosecuting? These 70 pro-life counseling centers have all contacted local law enforcement about the destruction that took place in their facilities. So, I mean, come on.
Well, you know, I don't know why they haven't made arrests. I suggested not too long ago, might have been last week, that, if they're having trouble making arrests and you've got all these threats out there nationwide, we may want to consider, reinvoking the KKK law of 1871 and suspending habeas corpus to get these people in. There's a concerted effort to harm a group of people, and we need to quell that quickly. And that's KKK Act of 1871 is still on the books. And I see this as a perfect opportunity to protect this group of citizenry from further attacks.
Right, right. And again, I reiterate, I mean, they began to use the RICO Act, I believe, against Operation Rescue.
Yep.
I believe they were using it against pro-life counseling centers that had more than one office because they were supposedly engaging in organized crime, carrying out organized crime. It's just pathetic, so.
Well, this is actually organized crime. What we're facing right now is actual organized crime. And we need some arrests. We really do. And I think that the people deserve some update from law enforcement.
I mean, that's absolutely pathetic. I thought that at this point we would have heard something back from the FBI in New York State regarding possible suspects or they should be carrying out wiretaps. They should be infiltrating. I mean, this is what they do. And this is what they did. This is what they did on January 6th. They were infiltrating.
Yeah.
And we all know this.
How long does it take? I mean, I know a lot of people in law enforcement, even people who study law enforcement. And, we're 3.5 weeks out from an arson attack in Buffalo. Multiple attacks that happened before that, multiple attacks that happened after that. How long does it take to identify perpetrators and amass evidence to such an extent that at least one of the 70 attacks would yield some at least one arrest?
Yeah, there's got to be. They see certain patterns of activity. They must have seen at least a few cases where they got a license plate number. Maybe some fingerprints. There must be something. I find it very hard to believe that after 70 attacks, they can't bring together bits of evidence to be able to, detect an emerging profile on perpetrators.
Oh, yeah. Well, we've got amazing technology right now. We can send people to the moon. Or at least we used to be able to send people to the moon. We should be able to find someone of the 70 attacks to arrest. But maybe there's something else going on, and they're looking to bring down a bigger syndicate or something. I would think that they would want to protect pro-life organizations and people a little bit better than they are in the meantime.
Right. So let me ask you a question. Have you seen an increase in let's say in the cases of people contacting your organization? Women with problem pregnancies, they maybe feel that this is a more legitimate option after the Dobbs versus Jackson woman's case. I mean, have you seen any change at all? Just curious about since the case was decided.
Our patient load has not changed dramatically. Quite frankly, the demographic of women seriously considering abortion, finding themselves facing an unplanned pregnancy, are not watching the news. They may have, they may be aware of the debate around Roe versus Wade. They may even be aware of the Dobbs case, but they're not, they have different priorities in life at this point in time, and they're not actually watching a lot of news. And if they are, it's probably going to be something like, something on a podcast or a magazine that's, similar to what they're looking for, regularly. But yeah, so we haven't seen much of a change in terms of patient load. Patient load is staying about the same, and, they're still as at risk as ever. Our goal, our mission, is that we're a Christ-centered agency dedicated to empowering men and women to erase the need for abortion by transforming their fear into confidence. And they're still just as afraid as ever because, what's my boyfriend going to do? My parents going to say, or what about school? What about childcare? What about finances? It all hits her like a wave. She's not concerned about choice. She says, I'm stuck. I'm trapped. I've got no other choice. I need to have an abortion. And our job is to give her all the support and security that she needs in order to give her the ability to say no to abortion, truly empowered to have her baby.
Right. So tell us about efforts to be able to raise funds for Compass Care Buffalo, to be able to repair the tremendous damage that's been carried out so unjustly.
Well, thank you. You know, if somebody wants to learn,
GoFundMe set up.
Reverend? Well, we have a rebuild bigger project right now. You know, they wanted to stop us. They wanted to put fear in us and stop us from doing what we do. And that includes Jane's Revenge, as well as the New York State Governor, New York State Attorney General, and the New York State Legislature. They all are intending to stop us and to put fear in us, but we're not afraid. God tells us to be afraid of him alone and to serve people sacrificially. And that's what we're going to continue to do. Wow. So if people want to give, we're going to reopen this. Our goal is to reopen on July 29th. That's 52 days after the firebombing. And we say 52 because, well, in the Bible, Nehemiah led a group of Hebrews back to Jerusalem to rebuild the wall of Jerusalem. It took them 52 days. It was a miracle. And this too will be a miracle to get it done in 52 days, but we're going to rebuild, and not just rebuild. We're going to rebuild bigger because we need to serve more patients than ever before. Abortion tourism has begun. Abortion didn't go away when Roe versus Wade was reversed.
And they're going to New York.
Yeah.
That's how it was at the beginning.
That's exactly how it was in the beginning.
Back in 1970, before Roe v. Wade, New York passed a very permissive abortion law, yep. And they started flying to New York.
That's right.
Mothers.
Abortion tourism. We had more abortions in 1970, 71, and 72 than we have had in any year since then. And it's starting again. We're looking at an increase of abortions. New York State is the abortion capital of the U.S. There are more abortions per capita in New York than any other state in the union. And that was the case for the entire 49 years. But we're looking to see more. 30,000 more, that's the estimate, 30,000 more women flying into New York to get their abortions. That's 100,000 abortions a year, probably more. And if they don't fly in, they're going to be going online to the teleabortion businesses to get the dangerous chemical abortion drugs mailed to their homes. It's 400% amazing. More dangerous than surgical abortion.
Right, so, amazing.
Sure.
But I mean, it has happened. I'm sure that there have been, you know, you do stay in touch with them. Daniel told me about your linear approach to quality care, to follow up. There must have been thousands of women who have decided to choose life, seeing the great lengths to which Compass Care goes to be able to help mothers. It must be heartening. Mothers feel alone, and then you're there, you know, giving medical care and advice and baby clothes and.
Oh yeah,
layettes and all that kind of stuff. And
when a woman walks into Compass Care for the first time in a long time, if ever, she feels loved. She feels respected. She feels dignified. If you look at Compass Care's
Google reviews, about her.
She's being cared for, and it's a unique. Unfortunately and sadly, it's a unique experience. But when she does experience that, it's a life changing event. It's like she's coming face to face with the love of God, and that's our hope. That's our prayer. That every woman experiences that.
Right. And I hope, you know, hopefully these people who have been so positively affected are going to help you now as well. Yeah. It's great work that you're doing, Reverend Jim. God bless you. Godspeed to Compass Care. And I hope, you know, in 52 days, like you say, you guys are bigger and better than ever and serving more mothers and unborn children with their needs. To be met. And I'd like to urge people. I mean, I do think we have to start contacting the FBI and demanding that something be done. And that I don't know if there's anybody at a nationwide level that's, you know, creating a campaign to bring law enforcement at the federal level to focus on this, because it's outrageous. And you said, it's like Kristallnacht, because this we're seeing, nobody cares.
Yeah. You know? Well, at the very least, I think Merrick Garland needs to you know, engage those law enforcement resources or step aside so somebody else can.
Absolutely. Okay. Okay. Well, listen, Reverend, thank you so much for being on the Bill McIntosh Show. Again, Godspeed to you, folks. Go to erasingtheneed.org, is it, or .com?
.com.
Erasing the need. Again.
Erasingtheneed.com.
Great. There, go to arrestingtheneed.com or go to compasscare.info for more information to be able to help this incredibly important work in New York State, America's abortion ground zero. Sadly, that's what it is.
Yeah.
So thank God the Compass Care and others are there as well, fighting the good fight for unborn children and for mothers facing problem pregnancies.